Climbing to the Moon, written by Ursula K. Le Guin and read by Marguerite Vine. I like climbing to the moon because in writing it, I enjoyed using verb tenses, riskily, as a means of moving through time in a complex, non-linear way, even of seeing time for a moment not as a forward movement, but as a whole, or as a dream.
Climbing to the Moon. Little Abby will help her build the fire, running down from the dunes, his curly head like a thistle-down puff against the long gold light in the west. "Let's get the fire laid before it gets dark, Abby," she'll say. And the child, eager to do grown-up work, to be her partner, to build the beautiful, dangerous fire against the fall of night, will say, "I'll get the wood," and be off like an erratic, fuzzy-feathered arrow. He will search, stoop, and gather, rush back, dropping bits of driftwood, dump his tiny load, and be off again. She will gather methodically. There are plenty of useful pieces of driftwood near the big, half-buried, half-burned log she has chosen as backlog and windbreak. Once she has her woodpile, she will begin to lean sticks up against the charred monster, over the hollow where she has arranged a tight, crumpled sheet of newspaper and bits of fine kindling. It won't be a big blaze. Huge, flaring bonfires that roar and volley out sparks are frightening to Abby, and to her, too. It will be a small, bright, clear fire in this vast, clear, bright evening. Abby will come up breathless with a very big log, a branch 3 feet long at least, and so heavy he has to drag it. She will praise the wood and the woodsman. Kneeling, putting her bare arm around his thin shoulders, she'll say, "Abby, love, look." And they'll look into the west. "That's where the sun was," Abby will say, pointing to the center source of the immense pale pink rays of light that fan out, barely visible, in the far air suffused with gold above the sea. "And that's the shadow of the earth." She will look up at the blue dimness that has risen from the mountains in the east to the top of the sky, just over them. "Yeah," says Abby, delighted with it all, and wriggles free. "Look, there's an even bigger log." And he's off. "When you come back, we'll light the fire," she calls, feeling for the matches in her pocket. She sits down on the warm sand to watch the great rosy shafts of light shorten down and down into the darkening horizon. The breakers are quiet and regular, 6 or 7 lines of them. Their huge noise all up and down the beach masks all lesser sounds except the rare cries of gulls flying late. No one else has a fire on the beach tonight. No one is walking down by the waterline. When she first hears the drumming, she thinks it is a helicopter, a Coast Guard patrol, and looks south for the black dot in the air. But her eye catches the movement nearer, down by the breakers, as she hears the drum, drum, drum of hooves on hard sand. The horse is at full gallop. The rider leans lightly forward, riding bareback. Beautiful. The double silhouette black against shining sand, the wild rhythm, the courage to ride at a gallop bareback. On to the north they go, fading into the dusk and the faint mist that hovers over the meeting of the water and the land. Oh, what a sight! She wishes he would come back, the centaur galloping between sea and sand, between daylight and the dark. And soon from the north comes the drum, 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 more felt than heard, and horse and rider take shape in the low mist, cantering now, lightly, easily. They slow and turn a little, and dropping into a walk, come up across the sand to her. They halt. The horse raises his head and shakes it. He wears only a rope bridle with a single rein.
"I saw you lighting the fire," the rider says.
She stands up. She puts her hand out to the horse, a dark bay with a blaze that gleams white in the twilight. She strokes the soft nose and reaches up to scratch under the sweaty forelock and around the roots of the big, delicate, flicking ears. The rider smiles. He vaults down from the horse's back. Like a cowboy, he simply drops the rein, and the horse nickers once and stands quiet. Oh, she knows this cowboy, this centaur, this bareback rider. "Where have you been riding?" she asks, and he answers, "Along the seacoast of Bohemia," smiling. The fire has just caught. She adds a stout, barky branch, which flares up at once. They sit down, one on each side, each seeing the other's face across the quivering flames, which seem to darken the twilight and draw it in around them. "No," she says, "not Bohemia, Hungary. You've been riding with the Magyars again."
"All across the steppes," he says in his laughing voice, soft and resonant, "with the warrior hordes coming to loot the West."
And the women follow along behind with the children and the coats and the tents and the beds.
They light the fires, and the men turn around and come back to the fires.
"And my man comes around to my side of the fire," she says. And he does. A quiet movement, a warmth along her side, a warm arm round her shoulders. She turns to him and comes into his arms. The dark head bends to her. A long kiss. Longer. Deeper. Firelight webs rainbows in her lashes. The sand is warm and soft. A dark bed. An endless bed. Its rumpled sheets, the breakers, glimmering. Sleepy, she looks straight up into the shadow of the world and sees Vega, the star always at the top of the summer night. The linchpin, the keystone, the white thumbtack that holds the whole sky up. "Oh, hello," she murmurs to the star. The spangle of the Milky Way is not yet visible, only the four stars of the swan burning faint in the turquoise cobalt sky. The sand is still warm from the long day's sunlight, but not really soft. After a while, you always remember, when you lie on it, that sand is stone. She sits up and gazes into the fire, then builds it up, adding a couple of long branches that can be shoved in farther as they burn, keeping it steady. Twigs flare up bright for a moment. Looking down the beach, now nearly dark, a faint blur of mist still hovering over the breakers, she imagines how the fire must look from down there at the waterline, a warm star, flickering, earthy. She wants to see it. She gets up, stretches, and walks slowly down to the wet sand. She does not look back till her bare feet feel the cold of the water. Then she turns and gazes at the fire up under the dunes. It is very small, a little trembling brightness in the vast blur of dark blue-gray that has taken away the mountains. There is no other brightness but the stars. She shivers and runs straight back up the sand, back to her fire, back to its warmth, where two women sit in silence, one on each side, gazing into the flames. Their tanned, lined faces are lit ruddy and deeply shadowed. She sits down between them, a little breathless, her back to the sea. "How's the water?" one of them asks. And she says only, "Brr." "When was it we went to the beach at Santa Cruz?" the older woman asks the younger, who answers, "Right after the war, wasn't it? I remember complaining about picnics with no hard-boiled eggs." "Spam. Terrible stuff. Salted grease. Think of it. She was just a baby. 3, maybe. More like 5. Their voices have always been quiet, never final. There was always a leaving open, a possibility of question. "I remember we had a fire on the beach against a drift log, like this. We sat so late. Yes, it was then, because I remember thinking no war out there, and it was hard to believe, after so long, that it was just the sea out there again. We were talking. She'd been asleep for ages, curled up on the blanket. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, she said, 'Mama, will it go on forever?' Do you remember that? I never knew if she was awake or dreaming."
We've been trying to remember names of constellations. I remember. She must have been half awake. She was looking at the fire. Will it go on forever? And you said, yes.
Yes, it will. And she settled down again, perfectly satisfied.
Did I? Did I really? I'd forgotten.
They laughed quietly, little soft grunting laughs. She looked from one face to the other, a good deal alike, though one was webbed and cragged, and the other still full, with a soft underlip. The deepest eyes glinted in the firelight.
Oh, she said. Oh, but it didn't. It doesn't. Does it?
They looked at her, four tiny warm fires glinting and trembling in their eyes. Did they laugh?
They were smiling.
Outside the circle of the firelight, a man spoke briefly, and a woman answered him.
How about another piece of wood?
One of the men said, and she looked at her fire and decided it was time for the piece she had been saving, the massive trunk end of a large branch, perfectly dry. She laid it with care in the bright center where it would catch fast and burn hot. Sparks flew up into the air that was now quite dark. All the stars hung over the fire, over the sea. The path of the galaxy whitened the quiet water far out beyond the breakers. Now and then a flash of light broke across the sand, luminous water, tiny sea beings, sea fireflies. The mist was gone. The dark was clear. The company of the stars shone brighter than the brief gleams among the breakers. The fire creaked and crackled, and the damp core of a log hissed and sang. They all sat or lay near the flames as the night grew cooler. Her people, some talking softly, others stargazing or sleeping. Abby had long been asleep, curled up on the blanket beside her. She pulled the blanket back over his bare legs. He wriggled and made a protest in his dream. There, she murmured. It will. Yes, it will, love. Up in the dunes, one of the horses snorted. The sound of the sea was low and long and deep, a huge roar up and down the edge of the land, too large to listen to for long. Sometimes a warmer breath of wind moved seaward, smelling of soil and summer, and a few sparks flew out on it for a moment. She got up at last, stiff. She slowly covered over the embers with cold sand. When that was done, she climbed the dunes alone in starlight toward the moon, which had not risen yet.